It's June 28th, 2016. Welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Each week, we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. Raging Chicken Radio is a project of Raging Chicken Press. Check out all our citizen journalism at RagingChickenPress.org. You can subscribe to Raging Chicken Radio on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iTunes. Subscribing to Raging Chicken Radio is one of the easiest things that you can do to help support this podcast and all the work we do with Raging Chicken. You can also help build a progressive activist media network for PA and beyond, folks. You can become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $2 a month. Raging Chicken turns 5 in July. That's just a week away. And our 2016 membership drive is all about preparing for the next 5 years of pull no punches progressive media and PA. Be part of help sustaining homegrown citizen journalism. Just go to RagingChickenPress.org and click Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you're listening on Podbean, just click the little green button right at the top that says Become a Patron and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all the fine thank you gifts for each membership level while you're there. Today, we'd also like to give a shout out to Lisa, who became a member at the $5 a month level. A huge thanks for helping sustain our work. And we want to give a reminder for everyone else out there who's been thinking about on the verge, almost clicked that button to become a member of Raging Chicken. Now through the end of June, that's just two short days away, folks. If you join at the $5 month level or above, $5 per month level or above, we will send you a copy of Ben Tupper's book, Greetings from Afghanistan, Send More Ammo as a Thank You. That's an addition to our already cool thank you gift. So it's an amazing read, definitely worth checking it out, and kind of a little special incentive to, you know, bring you on over into the membership arena. Yes, folks. Today, in addition to today's episode of Out the Coop, we will also release the latest episode of The Sit Down. The Sit Down is our interview series. And this week, I welcome Amy Lynch Beniak back on the show to talk about attempts to gut tenure line faculty in the PA state system of higher education. And she makes the case for solidarity between adjunct faculty and tenure line faculty to beat back this latest attack on quality public higher education. And today also, folks, this is just a little heads up. We'll be recording the first episode of our short series called The Brewcast, right? Some little inside home brewing here in Pennsylvania. Should be a cool thing. We'll give you details on it as it's recorded and we get it put together. That aside, on today's show, I'm just going to warn you in advance. Sean Kitchen has got his rage on a bit. Why? Well, this week, three messed up pieces of legislation just kind of showed up in the PA legislature. Last week, Pennsylvania passed one of the most restrictive anti-abortion bills yet. Last night, yesterday, a high-tech wage theft bill, which we've talked about on this program before, that was passed with some alterations from its original form, but it's still passed. And then yesterday, this week, PA legislators were on the verge of privatizing big swaths of our state public parks to private developers. They're ready for another handover, folks. Can you believe this? Kind of like selling off our kind of state assets or collective assets is absolutely incredible. So I was wearing you now last night. I'm sitting here, just kind of working on the sit down interview. And suddenly I get this constant barrage of messages from Sean, who's absolutely just flipping out over this parks bill. So, Sean, have you calmed down a bit since last night?
A little bit. But I'm still a little annoyed at the fact that we came pretty close at privatizing our state parks so Arnold Palmer can get a fucking golf course in some of our lands.
Wait. Arnold Palmer? Like, yes. The Arnold Palmer?
The Arnold Palmer. The golden boy himself, I guess. I know nothing about golf. I'm not in that elite class status of belonging to a country club or a golf club. You know, I like to enjoy our state parks as a common man. As a common citizen, which is what a commonwealth is. And they wanted to, you know, privatize some of our parks for different recreational uses, like lodging, amusement parks, water recreation slides. So imagine going up the top of Ricketts Glen out in, like, you know, northeastern Pennsylvania and taking a slide right down, taking a plunge right into the pool at the bottom of the hill, and a fucking golf course or more golf courses.
So wait, so this was actual legislation?
Yes, this was actual legislation.
This is a bill that was proposed.
This was actual legislation, and this is something that popped up earlier in the week. And the reason why there was a swift response to it was because of State Representative Greg Vitale holding a press conference attacking the governor and other Democratic members for supporting such a bill. The bill's original language, which has changed multiple times, right now it looks like it is actually a pilot program, which has its own kill mechanism, where if it doesn't get funded by the legislature, it will not happen at all. But the bill originally would do this. It would give 25-year contracts out to developers to either put some of these recreational items I just named within our state parks. It would create the public-private state park partnership board. Mm-hmm. And it would be a 9-member panel that were political appointees, and they were the ones handing out these contracts. And the funny thing is, the governor was supporting this all the way through until the pushback, throughout the process. You know, when the first got reported, a little less than like 5 or 6 days ago, the Post-Gazette reported that the governor spokesperson would not answer any questions whether this was part of the budget negotiations or not. And that the governor was working with the state representative to get a language that he wanted, that he felt was appropriate to sign off on.
So based upon what you're saying right there, then, so does this look like, you know, the governor was basically horse trading with the Republicans and some of the Democrats, basically willing to go with this privatization of our public parks thing in order to get a budget pass? Is that what it looks like?
Exactly. I think he was trying to grand bargain our parks and the environment away. And he throughout this whole entire process, throughout the past month and a half, the governor has relaxed some of the natural gas and oil wells that have come out from the IIRC, which is the regulatory panel that produces these rules. You know, the process these rules go through, this regulatory process within the Department of Environmental Protection. He got rid of everything for conventional oil wells that the DEP has come up with, which this process started under Governor Corbett. He has not pursued a severance tax on the natural gas drillers over the past year. That seems like it is gone. It's not going to happen. And then this was something that came out last week. And the blowback came hard and swift when this older crank, Greg Vitale, who everyone seems to hate up there, because he is the only environmental advocate on the Hill inside the House. And he started waving his hand, said, whoa, 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 we got to stop this. And the governor should be ashamed for even supporting this.
So basically, was it not until Greg Vitale actually kind of went up and did this press conference that people started paying attention?
Exactly. This bill was the language of this bill was passed around like in April. A co-sponsorship memo was going around in April. I think it was, you know, introduced, and people really don't pay attention when these bills come up. But then this bill just popped up out of nowhere in a committee meeting last week. It had bipartisan support, and there were a couple of Republicans and Democrats who voted against it in the committee hearings. Mm-hmm. And then it made it to the floor, and then made it to first consideration on the floor. And then a bunch of people finally saw what was happening here. And we were literally 2 or 3 days away from selling off our state parks within the House to get a budget done.
It's incredible that this is where we are. You know, again, I grew up in central New York, you know, up in the kind of Utica, Syracuse area and things like this. And we're like right at the foothills of the Adirondacks, you know. And one of the things that's amazing about the Adirondacks, right, is that it's one of the largest kind of mixed use kind of national parks that's out there, right? I mean, or state parks, right?
It's one of the largest wildlife refuges in the world.
Exactly. Now, the thing is, right, some people might point to that and say, well, you've got this, you know, these Adirondacks, right, which there's private developers there. There's towns that are doing this and all that. But in the Adirondacks, right, you have very stringent environmental standards, right?
Yes, it's like living in, for instance, a lot local, the Pinelands in southern Jersey.
That's exactly right. It's another great example. And so here you go, but from the way you've just, you know, kind of laid this out, and given the record, the environmental record so far under Tom Wolf, those kind of protections seem to be a thing of the past in Pennsylvania, that we seem to be rushing to want to kind of sell off any kind of common assets whatsoever just to get the budget done. You know, and I guess to play devil's advocate, give the governor kind of some kind of credit or something like that. It's like, you know, he's trying to get this budget passed and all this. People can say he's been put in a hard place, and that he's doing what he can to kind of, you know, get Pennsylvania moving or something like that. But, you know, it all kind of doesn't sit well, you know.
And this is coming from a governor who took a hard line against the privatization of the liquor stores and the privatization of other assets. But here he was willing to chop off parts of the state park system to bring it into the 21st century, with air quotes, which is what Representative Ellis wanted to do. He wanted, you know, he said, we need to modernize and bring our parks into the 21st century by having these recreations. You know, if you go down to West Virginia or if you go into Ohio, which I've seen these state parks there, mm-hmm. Yes, there are lakefronts that have, you know, like playgrounds and stuff like that. Yes, that recreation stuff is fine because you need that for having children. But he wanted to put golf courses and water slides and water attractions and all this type of stuff and hotels and amusement parks on our parks. Have you ever been to Ricketts Glen or the Promised Land? You know, some of the most, two of the most beautiful parks in this country are right here within Pennsylvania. And they're open up to the citizenry, and those parks would have been at risk.
You know, again, I could even see kind of like a case being made for, say, you know what, we want to make our parks more accessible, right? So therefore, we want to have, you know, within kind of certain radius of the kind of the park or something like this, that we'd like to see some nice, say, hotels or accommodations or kind of some more infrastructure that would be kind of around these areas so people could enjoy them more, right? But the trade-off would be they would have to meet these really stringent environmental protections. Right. And, you know, there'd be even be questions about to what degree are you going to allow just, you know, private developers to bid on it as opposed to having, you know, the state intimately involved in the construction of these things.
And one of the things is that the state, the DCNR, one of the most destructive things this bill would have done was that the DCNR would have lost control over who gets the contracts, and a 9-member panel of political appointees would decide who gets the contracts.
Get out of here.
Yeah. And what does that sound like? The School Reform Commission in Philadelphia, that same type of process.
That's exactly where I went. Yep, exactly.
Like this is the one thing you're going to hand this over to a School Reform Commission type of style that's getting rid of public schools for charter schools in Philadelphia, and you're going to apply that same method to our state parks where a 9-member political appointed panel, political appointees and not bureaucrats are deciding who gets these contracts. That's one of the most destructive things that this bill would have done. You know, like I went off, you know, this motivated me. I never write to any legislators on any issues. I never call them, you know, very suddenly do I call legislators to tell them to vote for or against or for something because I have the blog. But I wrote to someone last night who I know personally, and I'm just like, you're kidding me. Do you know what I have to, do you know how many national parks I've been to? Do you know what these parks mean to me growing up as a kid? Do you know what, like, you know, shaped my philosophy becoming an environmental science major in college? Do you know what it's like going through the process of getting a permit to hike down the Grand Canyon, camp there overnight and hike back up the next day? Do you know the process of trying to get a permit to hike in Yosemite National Park is like, and hike Half Dome, one of the hardest permits to get? Like, you know, do you have to jump through hoops to get that? You know, and this is and you're willing to chop off our state parks for this?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And like, it had me shaking, visibly shaking last night, just like thinking about this, you know.
Well,
like
you know what, Sean, I don't think you're alone in that. You know, I mean, I think that parks mean a lot to people, you know, especially the kind of open preserve and the opportunity, you know, to spend time in just beautiful
and
wilderness.
Also, like a week after I got done from coming back from Yellowstone and the Tetons and the Black Hills of South Dakota and traveling through the West, like, and seeing all this open land and everything. And just like, you know, I had a huge visceral reaction to it. And it was just like,
well, you know, I mean, when the national park system was set up and when, you know, there was the state preservations are set up, and the whole idea is that we're going to preserve this land for future generations, right? Which is why, you know, such a stringent regulations, why that, you know, if you want a permit, you got to jump through these hoops, because you want to say that we want to keep these lands and, you know, as pristine condition as possible. So that
what
we see today is something that, like, our grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to be able to see the same thing.
And one of the most famous Pennsylvanians, one of the most famous conservationists in part of that movement was from our home state. He's the reason why we have the state parks. He ran the U.S. Forestry Service. One of the first people to ever do so was Gifford Pinchot. And it's like you have to – there's a historical context to these state parks, keeping them as pristine as possible, keeping them as open and free as possible. And because that started right here in Pennsylvania. The person, he came from Pennsylvania. He's the reason why we have our state parks. He's the reason why we have our national parks. And you're going to go against that history, you know, opening it up.
It's crazy. So you mentioned that there was some pushback to this. So where does this bill stand now?
It seems like the bill was gutted yesterday in committee. Now it's not called the public-private, you know, the three Ps, whatever. It's now called a pilot program and not a board. This pilot program would look into establishing some of these recreational items, but there's a kill mechanism in it on the very last page, basically that if it's not funded by the General Assembly or the DCNR does not have the means to fund this program, that they will not go through with the pilot program at all.
Yeah, man, I think it's too high of a price to pay to kind of just to kind of meet a budget on time. And, you know, frankly, the alternative is that that, you know, Democrats, progressives and people who are kind of tired of this kind of right wing austerity programs are going to have to, you know, are going to have to stand up and kind of fight back, because that's the only alternative. Because
I mentioned in my email, you know, I'm tired of fighting these same fights every 2 years or every year with these parks. These parks have always been on the chopping block with Republicans. On a national level, they want to get rid of the National Park Service. And on the state level, they're trying to get rid of our state parks, either through privatization, through these private partnerships, or through just outright just giving them away to developers.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's something when you start seeing, you know, Democrats kind of saying, kind of throwing their hands up, say, oh, well, there's nothing we can do, and kind of joining in with the Republicans on it. That's when, you know, it can get real despairing, or, you know, what I would encourage the choice to be, angering, right? Because you get that and channel that anger into mobilization, you know. I'll put it a plug in for this too as well, then, because this is, you know, a perfect example of why on July 24th, right ahead of the Democratic National Convention down in Philadelphia, there's going to be, you know, a kind of march for, you know, clean energy revolution that's going to be taking place in Philadelphia, right in the area of the convention, to, you know, try to change the direction that that this nation is going and this state is going. Say that, you know, it's not okay to throw your hands up in the air and despair about this stuff and say, well, it's the best we can do. No, I mean, this is, once again, the kind of situation where we need to draw a line in the sand and we need to say enough. So we're coming up to the end of this segment, and I would still encourage folks, you know, if you've got questions about what's actually in this bill, and if you care at all about our state parks, right, give your representatives a call, you know, call them and say, hey, listen, I just heard about this bill that, you know, you guys are trying to pass that was going to privatize parts of our state parks. And I understand, you know, I heard this on, you know, the kind of podcast, Raging Chicken podcast. I understand that some of that has been rolled back, but what's actually going on? You know, because frankly, a lot of this stuff happens in ways that most of us don't get a chance to see. So, you know, all of us, we got to step up to the plate a little bit here and put some, and, you know, push back a little bit on our state legislators. But listen, when we come back after this break, I'm going to talk a little bit about the high-tech wage theft bill, which we've been calling it here, a high-tech wage theft bill that was passed yesterday in the legislature. We'll get into a little bit of that. And then we'll spend some time with the biggest contradiction yet. Right. Yesterday, there was a huge pro-choice Supreme Court decision, the biggest one in decades, right? The biggest pro-choice decision in decades coming out of the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, here in Pennsylvania, state legislators have passed the most restrictive anti-abortion legislation in quite some time. And guess what? Lots of Democrats signed on to it. So we're going to come back and we're going to talk about that after the break, too, as well. This is Kevin Mahoney. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. We'll be right back with Sean Kitchen.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. President Grover Cleveland had a growing problem. The nation was in the midst of a deep depression. Unrest amongst working people was mounting. The workers at the Chicago Pullman Palace car factory had declared a boycott against the company. They were angry that their wages had been drastically slashed while the rents in Pullman's company town had stayed the same. The boycott of Pullman cars threatened to snarl railroads throughout the nation. And on this day in labor history, the year was 1894. President Grover Cleveland signed the the law that declared Labor Day a national holiday. He hoped setting a day aside in recognition of labor would help appease frustrated workers. The bill had been rushed through Congress. It passed both the House and Senate unanimously. But the idea for Labor Day did not start with D.C. politicians. Working people themselves conceived the idea of the holiday. Two men with very similar sounding last names are both credited with coming up with the idea of a Labor Day. The first was Matthew McGuire. He was a machinist and secretary of the New York Central Labor Union. His birthday was also today in labor history. That year was 1850. The second person credited with calling for a Labor Day was Peter McGuire, a carpenter. The very first Labor Day celebration took place in New York City on Tuesday, September 5th, 1882. The goal was to demonstrate the strength and the spirit de corps of the trade and labor organizations. 5 years later, Oregon became the first state to officially declare a Labor Day holiday. More than two dozen other states had founded similar holidays by the time the National Labor Day was declared. For more than a century, Labor Day has been set aside to remember those who fought for a better life for themselves and their children, and to remember the struggles and celebrate workers' solidarity. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. Each week, we get into the good, the bad, and the ugly of everything that is Harrisburg and PA with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen. So, Sean, as I mentioned right at the beginning of the program today, that there were three pieces of legislation, or attempted legislations in some cases, that it kind of got your hackles up this week. You know, we already talked about what's been going on with the park systems, attempts to privatize our parks. But a story that you've been reporting on for a while now, since the last attempt to pass this bill, that is the legislation allowing for employers to pay their employees basically through these ATM cards, right? Or these debit cards, I should say. Instead of giving the paper paychecks and things, they want to just be able to give them these debit cards. And as you've reported, there's all sorts of fees that are associated with these. And you're not alone in this. I mean, especially lots of labor groups have been out there speaking pretty strongly about, you know, against this kind of legislation, precisely because it hurts the most vulnerable workers the most by imposing all sorts of fees on them for withdrawing money from ATM machines and so on. So yesterday, I understand that a version of that bill eventually made its way through the legislature and is on its way to becoming law. Is that correct?
No, not exactly. Yet. It passed the Senate 43-6. You know, in our previous reporting with this bill and talking to staffers, there were absolutely zero protections for employees who have these payroll debit cards. It seems like the latest bill, which, you know, I'd like to hope Rick Smith and I contributed to these changes in the legislature, in this legislation, you know, with our reporting, because the media was completely blacked out on this type of bill. There are some more protections with fees for people getting the cards, and now employers have to disseminate the information and the fees associated with these cards to the employees who opt into this program, which is one of the issues that I brought up with this bill, you know, saying, hey, New York has been pushing for this. I'm sure other advocates have been, you know, other law centers, or, you know, poverty law centers and stuff like that. This is one of some of the issues they've been forcing, trying to get into the bill to make it less bad. And there's also more protections for fees. I think they added a list of items where that you cannot have a fee associated with. And so it basically, this bill has become less bad, but it's still bad.
Well, because it's really remarkable that it hasn't got more attention all the way around, because, you know, as you reported on, you know, initially, was this what first drew attention to this in Pennsylvania was there was a lawsuit right up in the northern part of the state, basically. And some of the evidence in that lawsuit was showing that employees who were paid in this mechanism through some McDonald's up there, in the end, we're actually getting paid less than minimum wage because of these fees and so on. So, you know, and, you know, the New York Times paid attention, right, because they reported on it. But it seems that the media in our own state was just really kind of not up to the task of kind of staying on this. And, you know, I think you're right to characterize it as less bad. I mean, I still don't feel good about this mechanism. Like, why? You know, it seems like sometimes disclosure, like having to disclose fees, is the easy way out, right? It's the easy kind of way to say, okay, we're going to get everything covered. And then it just pushes everything on to the employee.
And one of the things I found I find amazing about this bill, the Senate found a time to introduce this back in May and pass this a month later, you know, and go after employees' wages, while a actual bill to increase the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour has not even got a single committee hearing in over a year within the Senate. So, I mean, it goes to show you the priorities that our legislature has, you know, stealing people's wages.
Here? Why do you think these legislators are so intent on passing this bill but not touching the minimum wage one?
Because it helps out business owners and banks, people who run the Senate. It helps out. It helps the business owners save money and lets banks get their fees. But the people who suffer the most are the ones who are the low wage workers who have not seen a minimum wage increase, who haven't even gotten a hearing or a committee vote on the minimum wage bill since it was introduced in January of 2015 at the beginning of this legislative session. There was one hearing on it, and that was over a year and a month ago.
So it's pretty consistent then. It's basically, you know, once again, we see legislation being offered in support of the people at the top at the expense of the people at the bottom. So whether we're talking about not getting a vote on the minimum wage bill or facilitating, you know, cost cutting measures for businesses and giving give backs to banks, we're working from the same playbook, basically.
Yeah. And one of the things I find amazing about this is that this bill pretty much passed without any media reporting at all. The last time the media in the state talked about something like this was the McDonald's case.
Pretty incredible. So do we have a count on who this is? I assume this is once again passed from in a bipartisan vote.
Yes. 43-6.
There you go, folks.
There was only six Democrats voted against it. The only six legislators who voted against the bill were Democratic senators. Pretty much a lot of other Democrats. There was a lot of Democrats who voted for the bill. The only ones who basically voted against it were Teplitz, Vincent Hughes, I believe Taglione, and maybe a couple of others. But for the most part, the whole entire Democratic caucus supported passing this bill.
Oh, there we have it. So once again, you know, we kind of saw this one coming. This looks at the direction this was going. But let's spend some time a little bit on, you know, in some ways, the real big news yesterday was the Supreme Court basically kind of struck down some restrictive Texas abortion laws in one of the biggest pro-choice decisions in decades. While at the same time, our own legislature was passing restrictive abortion measures once again. So walk us through what happened with this bill in Pennsylvania. What's actually in it? What's it call for? And how do you see that in light of what we see with the Supreme Court?
So yesterday, last Tuesday, this bill has nothing to do with what happened within the Supreme Court. The bill that the House passed last week with the help of 28 Democratic legislators, one of the highest ranking Democrats within the caucus, Mike Hanna, the minority whip, number two or three in line within the caucus, voted for this bill. A bunch of other leaders, committee leaders who are high up within the Democratic caucus, also voted for this bill.
Do you know offhand how many of those legislators were women by any chance?
I know at least one offhand voted for it within the caucus, Pam Snyder. She's from Western PA. You know, the Democrats who supported this are from the Guns, Gods, and Labor caucus within the Democratic Party. They do not believe in women's rights. They don't like to be seen at LGBTQ rallies or anything like that because they don't want that to come back to hurt them within their districts. The bill that they passed received a lot of criticism. And what ended up happening was this bill was sitting within third consideration, was tabled on third consideration, which is the third day of voting. So basically, this bill just popped up out of nowhere. It didn't have to go back through the maneuvering to get it from first, second, and third consideration. It just popped up. They voted on it in the House without even warning anyone.
So what does this bill actually do?
It bans all abortions after 20 weeks, which they have labeled dismemberment abortions. These are very low percentage abortions, but these are the times, you know, between 20 and 24 weeks. This is when you find out that you have birth defects within the child and the pregnancy is not viable. And what this would do, this would force women to give birth to a fetus that would either die at the point of birth or have a very painful and short life right afterward. So for the sanctity of life, they're going to force these women to have a baby, go through the whole entire process, knowing that their fetus will be dead by the time of delivery, or the fetus will die shortly after birth within a few days, a few hours to maybe a month or two.
So this is basically that same bill that you reported on a while ago that's been backed by some of these, you know, right wing nut job, big money groups and the kind of anti-abortion crew.
Yes. And one of the groups, I think, pushing for this bill was also one of the groups pushing for the bill that was struck down within the Supreme Court yesterday, or one of these same type of groups. And these were these regulations on what abortion clinics have to have. They have to basically be emergency operating rooms. You know, you have to go, like, if you go get an abortion done, you're pretty much going into something like an optometrist's office, you know, something that's small, compact. They want you to be in an actual emergency room type of setting with 8-foot-wide hallways, and they want this to mimic a hospital as much as it can, instead of looking like a normal operating room that you go when you go to a specialist to go get something done.
Exactly. And, you know, and politicians, these right wing politicians who kind of are pushing for these bills, they've even been pretty frank about what they're trying to do. I still remember back, I think it was Missouri or Mississippi, where they, lawmakers came right out and said, this is a way that we're going to shut down all the abortions in the state, right? Is that we're going to shut down all the clinics because we're going to make it kind of untenable for them to be in existence. They're not going to be able to afford to do what we're going to ask them to do. So that's, on one hand, good on the Supreme Court. Remember, we're one justice down, and we've seen these decisions, these 4-4 tie decisions kind of keep on coming down. But this didn't happen. So you had a majority of justices, a 5-3 decision kind of make this ruling.
And this, I think, was one of the only times in Kennedy's career where he actually voted in favor of being a pro-choice. Usually he's someone who votes against is pro-life and votes for the abortion restrictions. But this is one of the first times, I think, where he actually voted in the majority on this issue, which good for him. Because of that, this became one of the biggest pro-choice decisions within decades, probably since Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and this is one of the few times that, what became clear, and at least, you know, his take on it was, you know, it was not an ideological decision. I mean, he's ideologically opposed to abortion, right? I mean, at least it seems that way.
An undue burden.
Exactly, right? So, I mean, he actually looked at the letter of the law. So it's interesting that you've got one of these conservative justices. You know, I know he's been talked about as a swing vote and all this kind of stuff, but, you know, what we can, you know, a swing vote today, you know, is right wing 10 years ago, but whatever. That's beside the point.
But
it's pretty remarkable to see at least some pushback against this relentless march against women's reproductive rights.
Right. And then moving on, you have State Senator Dan Leach, who is talking about trying to repeal this same type of law in Pennsylvania, which passed in 2011. And if you might, if I may remind you, mm-hmm. Dalen Leach voted against this bill. And this is one of the main sticking points in the primary for his congressional primary against Brendan Boyle, who actually voted for this bill, mm-hmm. just to throw that out there. But Dalen Leach recently has come off a successful lawsuit where he sued the NRA, and he came out victorious with the basically any local ordinance. The NRA can sue anyone in the state, and they get money from those townships if they pass any type of gun ban. Dalen Leach came off a Pennsylvania Supreme Court victory of that just recently last week. Mm-hmm. And he's threatening to try to repeal this law either through the General Assembly. It's pretty vague on what he wants to do. But hopefully he files another lawsuit and does this again. And that's the type of action we need in Harrisburg. Someone who, you know what, screw it. I'm going to do what's unpopular. I'm going to file a lawsuit. I'm going to make you spend money and resources, and I'm going to protect people's rights. If your legislator's not going to do it, legislature's not going to do it, I'm going to do it through the checks and balances of the court system.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what it's going to take. It's going to take more people doing what Dalen Leach is doing. Is that, you look, if our legislator is so kind of, you know, one, it's so gerrymandered that it's, you know, we're not going to see any kind of significant shift in the makeup of our state legislator in some time, at least the House, right? We might see some shift in the Senate. But then, you know, at some point we got to fight back. And this is one of the ways to do this. And, you know, to remind everybody, the Pennsylvania law that Dalen Leach has taken aim at, you know, this is something that was signed into law by Governor Corbett. And this is from an article in Philly.com. this is kind of a description of it. What that law required was freestanding clinics that perform abortions to comply with the same safety standard as freestanding outpatient surgery centers. The law required wider hallways and doorways, bigger operating rooms, new HVAC systems, full-time nurses, new ceiling tiles, and other standards that cost millions of dollars, clinic operators say. So you're talking about, you know, most of clinics, healthcare clinics, right, that offer abortions, that because one of the services that are there are not multi-million dollar operations, right? So you're talking about imposing millions of dollars of cost on these facilities. That is, you know, I don't know how you look at that other than an attempt to wipe these clinics out, especially saying where research has shown that, you know, these clinics don't need all those things. It's overkill. And the same kind of requirements are not being made on other facilities that offer different kind of outpatient services. So that's, you know, that's something else. So good on Dale and Leach for pushing forward to this. And I hope we do see a lawsuit fairly soon.
Yeah, it would be nice to see one. It's refreshing to see someone doing something in Harrisburg. And even if he's only doing it by himself.
Yeah, no, exactly. He's got to stand up there. Well, you know, there's a reason why they call him the liberal lion, right? So, you know, once in a while, you just got to sit back and roar. That's what it is. So we're gonna have to pay attention to that. Maybe we can get someone on at some point from Dale Leach's office or Dale Leach himself to talk a little bit about the pushback there. So that's good. Well, listen, we're coming up the edge of the segment. It's been quite a crazy week in Harrisburg. And, you know, Sean, I hope that I understand you got a new air conditioner. So I hope that's at least keeping some of the heat that's from the rage down a little bit.
Yeah, it will be. And then I guess when we come back, we can talk about some of the things upcoming for Pizza Boy. I got some exciting news to share.
That's fantastic. So after the break, we're going to hear about the upcoming things from Pizza Boy out there in Harrisburg, PA. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast with Sean Kitchen. We'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop podcast. Each week we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. So welcome back, Sean. And well, I guess you got some news about some Pizza Boy releases, huh?
Yes. Pizza Boy this week on Thursday and Friday will be canning for the first time ever. We'll be canning the Sunny Side Up Stout, which I'm sure you've had plenty of times. I know you've had plenty of times.
Just or once or a dozen times.
It might be one of the best coffee stouts ever.
It's fantastic. It really is. And anybody, if you have not tried this and you're in the Harrisburg region, you need to get the Pizza Boy and have this. But hey, if it's going to be in cans now, I mean, who knows? So you might not be able to pick it up at some other locations too as well. But I mean, I would say, you know, get there and have it. It is absolutely fantastic. And there was a version of it I don't know if it's fair to say that I liked it even more, but there was one that had orange in it at one point, which was absolutely fantastic. And there was another one that had some heat in it too, if I remember.
Yes, the one I actually gave you that one when I was back home in the fall, in the spring, with wajillo peppers, cinnamon sticks, cocoa nuts, and vanilla beans. Oh my god,
that was so good.
Yeah, and then they're going to be canning the bourbon barrel Sunny Side Up, which is absolutely fantastic, freaking phenomenal.
So let me ask you, are they canning for like for a distribution, or are those cans just going to be available only in the store?
Don't know. I'm pretty sure most of the stuff's going to be for in-house only, but it's very, I love working there. I absolutely love seeing the customers there. And it's one thing to be seeing what this company has gone through over the past 8 months. It's been exploding within the craft beer scene. It's always been big within the craft beer, like scene, the cult scene in the state. But you're watching this company take that next step into releasing cans for the first time. And you really
got to be
know.
Exciting. That's got to be exciting.
It's exciting. I'm going to be there on Thursday, helping them can for free. I'll be volunteering. It's going to be fun. I'm volunteering my time on Thursday to be canning. I'm sure I'll be getting some of the spoils, but they're also going to be putting out a couple of other beers. They haven't said which ones, but there's also going to be a rotating IPA that's going to be getting canned each time too.
Nice.
So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the next few months. This place we're located right off of 76, 81, and 83, which are like three main high interstates that either cut across Pennsylvania or connect us through DC, Baltimore, Northern Virginia, and upstate New York. I'm sure you're familiar with these highways.
Yeah,
if you
absolutely.
Go upstate New York, we have people passing through all the time, and it's just in a prime location. I mean, you're right off of the intersections of 76, 81, and 83. And people are always stopping in from out of state. The weekends, last weekend, we had everyone was either from Delaware, Maryland, or Virginia that we were serving. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, we had a bunch of customers came in for the first time, came in from Rochester, New York. Three people from Rochester, New York, never even known each other. They live within 15, 20 minutes of each other. And they were all just passing through. They're coming from Maryland or coming back home from Pittsburgh.
No, I tell you, that's one of these, absolutely fantastic breweries, craft breweries that is just, you could almost feel it getting ready to explode. I mean, in kind of my town, I've got, Free Will Brews right down the street from us, practically walking distance from my house. Watching them going from this kind of small facility in a basement where, you're kind of, you're walking in there and say, is this actually the tasting room or is this like, where I come to die?
I remember the tasting room, the little stool that fit like four people and that was it.
Exactly. With like, your open kind of walk-in freezers there, with the heavy plastic hanging down, something like that. And going from that to like a tasting room where they are now, which is just a beautiful little space. And then they shifted to the bottling and, now they've got, you see the beer popping up all over the place. And, to know how good Pizza Boy beer is, right? How good the stuff coming out of that facility is, man, it's incredible seeing to go into cans. It makes me a little concerned too, it's like, no, I hope they don't lose it, but I can't imagine that they would.
Oh no, they won't. We're getting a professional person coming in that's going to be a mobile canning unit. And I think it's that next step. I mean, you can feel it. I enjoy working there. And West Virginia to Maryland, to DC, to Baltimore, Delaware. And then you have people traveling out from Pittsburgh on a week, like every 6 or 7 weeks. We have people coming in from Baltimore. Like we have regulars coming in from Baltimore every 6 weeks, though, 2 months that give us, we get gifted beers from people. Mm-hmm. And they do nothing but take like 15, 20 crowlers back home with them every time they come up. So, I mean, like, and every time people are like, yeah, I never heard of this place. But, my friend from Rochester, New York, my friend from Virginia told me I got to stop here on the way through. My brother told me I got to stop here on the way through. I stopped here and they're like just blown away. It's just amazing, especially when it's a Monday morning and it's dead. You get to like really wine and dine these people. And get to show them the true experience of what it's like drinking here at Pizza Boy.
Oh man, that's awesome! So all the canning takes place on Thursday. Now, does that mean they're going to be available right away, or are they kind of holding off on a release date?
I don't know. We're not told these type of things.
Yeah, no. I just didn't know. I didn't know if there was already a plan to say that we're going to can, or we're going to release in this thing or not. I just wanted to make sure that if there was something that was out there that people know about. But I recommend that folks really check it out. You go to their Facebook page, and I know that Pizza Boy Facebook page, Pizza Boy Ales of Hamden. If you get on there and you like their page, anytime they have a new release coming up, shows up on their Facebook page. Make sure you follow them on Twitter. You know the Twitter handle offhand?
At Ales of Hamden.
At Ales of
Hamden. Also,
yeah, go ahead.
Follow them. They're very Instagram heavy, so follow them on Instagram. That's where they post a lot of the pictures and releases. And one of the things I like to do, since we're kind of kept in the secret on some things, what I do with a lot of other breweries, even with the Raging Chicken, I recommend you doing this. Go onto the page and hit, there's going to be a tab up there on the top of the page. Put, and just change your settings to whenever they post something, it goes right to the top of your newsfeed. so you can get first information within minutes of them posting it. And it's not something that's buried in your newsfeed or you don't see it until 2 or 3 days later.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, cool. So that's going to be an awesome experience. I can't wait to, you know, I'm going to be waiting with bated breath, following those feeds to find out when that's going to be released and see if I can get out there to Harrisburg to pick up some of that stuff. Because I'll tell you, man, it'd be kind of great to have some of the first cans coming out of Pizza Boy. And like I said, I can't recommend it enough. That beer is just absolutely fantastic. So, well, have fun on Thursday, Sean.
I will. I'll be having fun. That's for sure.
All right. So this has been Out to Coop podcast, the project of Raging Chicken Radio. Just as a couple programming notes, folks, next week is 4th of July week. I'm calling it 4th of July week. I don't know why. It's the 4th of July is next week. And we're going to be taking a break from Out to Coop. We've got some traveling. I've got some family stuff to kind of deal with next week. We've got some pre-recorded stuff that are going to come out next week. Just so know that we're going to wish everybody a happy 4th of July and a safe, happy 4th of July. And if you got any kind of, good craft beer tips from the holiday weekend, just go to our Facebook page at Raging Chicken Press and, drop us some comments or give us some tips, about what you're drinking this weekend, for the holiday, which would be kind of really cool. Also just a reminder that, later on today, we're going to be recording our first episode of the Brewcast, which, I'm working with a local home brewer who approached me as a friend of mine, who approached me and said, look, I'm about to do this recipe, right? This is only the third time that I've done my own recipe. And I just thought it would be kind of cool to do a podcast following the brewing process, just from, from getting the ingredients ready to go, to bottling the, to bottling the stuff and then kind of opening up and seeing what we got. So we're going to do it. It's going to be kind of a fun little summer experience. We're going to be recording later on today. And, my plan at this point, if you've made it this far in the podcast today, you'll get to, this is your tip. My plan is to release that, next week instead of the Out to Coop podcast. So you're still going to get some content coming from Raging Chicken Radio. You're still going to get an episode of the sit down. Ideally, we've got some couple other interviews that are lined up for that, but look for that next week. And then Sean and I will be back following week with Out to Coop. And also as a programming note, Sean and I were just talking about this in one of our breaks that I think we're going to be moving Out to Coop to Thursday release instead of Tuesday. Sean's work schedule has kind of shifted around as mine has a little bit. So the Tuesday mornings are getting a little tricky just to kind of squeeze it all in. I mean, Sean, as soon as we get off here, is going to have to run out to work. We're going to have to work anyway. So just so know that that's kind of the heads up for next week. I'll try to go to Facebook Live too as well and make sure that we make that announcement. But I'm very excited about the Brewcast coming up for, this is, we'll see what happens. I mean, that's the kind of coolest thing about it. You don't know what's going to happen with it. And Matt, who's the brewer here, has even said, it's like, he has no idea what to expect, how it's going to come out. It's just kind of the exciting part about it. So anyways, that's the up to date. That'll get you up to date and everything happening at Raging Chicken Radio. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will see you soon. Have a happy 4th of July weekend. And Sean, have an absolute blast canning on Thursday.
Oh, I will. I'll, if I survive, I will let you know how everything goes.
You got it. All right. We are out of here. See ya.